Dear listeners, welcome to Faces of Digital Health, a podcast about digital health and how healthcare systems around the world adopt technology, with me, Tiasza Zajc. In this episode, we're traveling to the Middle East, more specifically the GCC countries. You will hear from Pilar Fernandez-Hermida, who's an international go-to-market expert with over 20 years of experience launching sales and partner ecosystem strategies in healthcare. She's based in Abu Dhabi in the UAE and says people too often only think about Dubai when they think about the UAE. However, many opportunities are elsewhere as well. Pilar is focused on public-private partnerships and really has an in-depth understanding of how healthcare works. So I absolutely loved when in our prep call she said, people say that data is gold. Data is not gold. People who know what to do with the data are. Now think about that. In this discussion, you will hear a bit more about the culture in the Middle East, how to interpret different styles of communication. Pilar also says that the entrepreneurial spirit here is 10 times as strong as in the US, and that biotech and drug development are the next thing to watch for in the region. I hope you're intrigued. Now, just before we dive in, if you will enjoy the show, do leave a rating or a review wherever you get your podcast. It's only a click if you listen in Spotify. I will absolutely be grateful if you leave a review in iTunes, because all these things really help others in the space find the show as well. And also check out our newsletter. You can find it at fodh.substack.com. That's fodh.substack.com. It only comes out once a month, approximately. So when you do get this email, you can be sure that it has a lot of valuable and in-depth content. Now let's dive in. Pilar, welcome to the show.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for having me here today. I'm super excited, too. I've been following your podcast for many, many years, so it is an honor.
If we dive straight into the topic, when one reads about the GCC countries, the GCC Council brings together six Arab countries, that's Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE. And when we read about the digital health innovation and ambition in this space, it's pretty impressive. The investments are high. The determination and enthusiasm in tech-supported healthcare is high. The government spending is also very favorable to move things forward. If I just mention some numbers, from a region-wide perspective, the investments went from $2.4 billion in 2016 to more than $30 billion in 2021, and that's actually projected to go even higher. So how would you describe the ecosystem and the drive behind this positive attitude towards innovation and healthcare digitalization in this area?
Yeah, thank you for the introduction. It is always good for any entrepreneur to understand why things are happening, because there's always, normally always, a reason. So I would start saying, what is the drive behind these numbers, this growth, which is impressive? And if you look pre-pandemic, the region, the GCC region, when we look, for instance, areas like beds per 1,000 inhabitants, it was really lagging behind versus OECD. They were not doing so bad compared to the doctor ratio. I just pulled the latest numbers. But for instance, Germany has currently 8 beds per 1,000 inhabitants versus UAE that has 2.9. The average in the European Union is something 4.6. Yeah. So the doctor ratio was not so bad, but what happened is 2020, there was a pandemic and there was a reckoning that the countries needed to have more infrastructure facilities, which you could argue they had not. The GDP investment in digits, the infrastructures were in the single digits before 2018, 2019. Now it has incremented in some countries to 18% of the GDP. Yeah. So there has been a big push for infrastructure building, and it has been fueled by the pandemic, because in the GCC, talking to several officials, there was a reckoning during the pandemic that they could not be so dependent on importing everything from medications, like something like vaccinations, to even food security was a big concern when everything was closed down. So in the last, let's say, 3-4 years, we have seen a radical increase in building the healthcare and the biohealth and the ag tech infrastructure. This is what's pushing most of the projects at the moment. You could argue that it's still in catch-up mode if we look at the index of debt, but it's a great opportunity, therefore, for infrastructure providers. And it's a great opportunity as well for digital health companies, because behind that drive, they want to leapfrog into the new economy. They want to be less dependent on oil revenues in the future. And part of that is the utter embrace of AI. I had to use the word, and digital infrastructures. For instance, Saudi, the largest market in healthcare, 60% of the market, they, by 2030, they want to have 70% of all the services digitally delivered, yeah? Healthcare services. So you have the first, the biggest virtual hospital is in Saudi already. It's called Seha. And a lot of initiatives, even in the area of longevity as well, that also touches digital health as we understand it.
Mm-hmm. One of the characteristics of the area, especially the UAE, is the big number of expats. More than 50% of the population is actually coming from abroad. So what kind of impact do you see that has? And when you say that there's a huge drive to build things in the region, does that mean that basically the expats that come here actually build their own things and stay here for decades? Or is it more that the large number of expats is also attributed to the foreign companies that want to enter these markets, and you always need local workforce if you want to succeed in any market, to understand the culture, to have people on the ground, to actually be present where you want your products to work?
Yeah, it is a very interesting question, and I'll try to give you a simplified view. Has a lot of ramifications. It is a delicate balance. Look, I'm now resident of Abu Dhabi, where 90% of the inhabitants are foreigners, right? So, and it's very welcoming, by the way. I never felt more welcome as a foreigner, and they give you a lot of facilities, etc. But again, things have changed dramatically. If you look at all the 2030 agendas, most of the countries in the Gulf, they all want to drive, they want to be self-sufficient, they want to diversify the economy into what they call the new economy with a very data-driven approach, yeah? And then they want to become a net exporter as well. But to do that, you need to grow local businesses, yeah? The next Amazon of the region. Actually, you have it noon, but other companies, other technologies. So there's a big bet now in novel therapies. There's a big bet in the computation, AI, deep tech, as we call it. And this is the catch-22, is like, you need to build the supply chains in order to enable those industries. And if the capacity is not in the country, you need to keep on getting the right talent and attracting the right talent. So on the one hand, there is a drive in flexibility of visas, golden visas, things like that. And then there is a very strong agenda of how do we engage more of the local population in this industry? Because you could argue that they have been left out from the wave, yeah? And for instance, UAE has an emeritization program. Saudi has a Sauditization program. They want the companies to come, or the people to come here and build things also for the local population. They want even corporates or industries to have a shadowing program to involve Emiratis. They're pushing a lot of know-how transfer with academia, bilateral exchanges, because the idea is that, and specifically you notice that more in Saudi, because in Saudi, 60% of the population is Saudi, is local. They need to catch up in a lot of areas. So know-how transfer and partnerships is the call of the day. Yes, they need the technologies to build these assembly lines, to build, for instance, drug manufacturing, things like that. But they don't want extractive type of approaches to the region anymore. They want people to invest in the region. I'm not sure that answers your thing. So yes, very welcoming, incredibly welcoming to innovators, to people from abroad, bring to add value to their agendas, but in a win model as well. Yeah, we need to also invest and transfer our skills. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How would you say that the countries in the region differ? Because when we talk about the Middle East and when we talk about the UAE, usually the first associations would be Dubai, super multinational. There's Arab Health is usually taking place there. But what about other places, other spots in the region?
It's so different. Even the Emirates, just to put it all world perspective, it's only 52 years old, yeah? 52, yeah? So seven Emirates got together. So when you go from Sharjah to Abu Dhabi, well, rather Sharjah to Dubai to Abu Dhabi, it's intrinsically a very different landscape. Abu Dhabi and Dubai had their own, for instance, in healthcare, they had their own healthcare entities, yeah? You had the federal government. So it is different players, different dynamics, different management and rulers, and also you have to adapt. But and then Saudi Arabia is more, let's say, centralized, one kingdom, yeah. But it is decentralizing to a certain extent into health clusters, as they call it, 21. So you, I always say to entrepreneurs, is like, you need, before you enter a market or before you choose the market, you need to do a bit of analysis. You need to look at the trends, what's happening, what's not happening, who is there, how you could add value to that, and with whom. And the with whom is very important because going back to what we discussed before, we talk infrastructure building, big infrastructure projects, yeah, which they will take shape in a lot of public and private partnerships, the big fish, yeah. So we need to understand where, if you belong there and how, is going to be viable for both parties, yeah? Procurement-wise as well. So I never, even if you are in one market like Abu Dhabi, it's very difficult, it's very different if you transact with public sector than you transact with private entities. So you need to basically be cognizant of that. But I would say one advice, and I think everybody listening that works in the region would agree, is that PPPs is really the big opportunity. Public and private partnerships. So you're a small innovator. Figure out where you belong, where you go and why, with what, with whom, how to make money, which is the go-to-market. And it has to be localized. Abu Dhabi has different dynamics than Sharjah or than Dubai. And different countries, yeah.
So what are some of the mistakes that you're noticing startups or company making when either considering entering the GCC countries or already pursuing customers in the region?
I would say that the top mistakes will depend on what they are looking. Companies traditionally, they go to market for four different non-mutually exclusive focus areas. Yes, you can want to reach new markets, sell your product in new markets. You might want to tap into the R&D. You might want to tap into the talent, or you might want to tap into funds. Altogether, they make entrepreneurship, right? And I think that number one misconception is that anytime you say UAE, people think people are throwing money at you to do anything, and it's not true, meaning that it is hard to raise funds for early stage companies. It might come as a surprise. Yes, the big sovereign entities, they invest in grow up more solid businesses. There is an IPO market that's recently launched, but it's not really, the market for startups is maturing, it's still evolving rather than maturing. For instance, in Saudi, you have PIF is putting a lot of money into that. So it's being created because let's remember what we said before. It is a market that traditionally was importing technology, yeah? To start creating and exporting technology requires a bit of a shift, yeah? And that includes the funding mechanisms, yeah? But having said that, this is the first thing. They are not throwing money at you. But having said that, if you do your homework, if you know who you're talking to, and you actually position your company in the right way, there might be money at the end of the discussion because there is a lot of liquidity, yes? But another thing that also is very important, especially for the area of biotech, which is key for this market, because they want to start creating their own drugs, yeah? Everybody is building the assembly lines, let's speak. It's a lot of people knock at the door because they think, I can produce a drug. So I come here, they give me money, I bring my technologies, I do it. And actually, people are very surprised to find out that the focus of some of the markets here is to attract FDI, foreign direct investment. So they're asking for your money rather than you coming here to get their money. So yes, there are PPPs, you could get there if they're already cooked, and you can tap into that. But if you want to create your own PPP, they might actually ask you to bring money to the tables. And you find very funny statistics like Germany, France, and a lot of European countries are the main FDI investors in healthcare at the moment. Mm-hmm. Hospital facility. But finally, on the cultural perspective, the hospitality of this region is incredible. So people sometimes confuse giving you the car and say they're interested in you. Okay, that's it, done deal. But no, here is very much about building solid, long-term relationships, yeah? I think the model of the tourist entrepreneur is a bit away. So if you think about it as an entrepreneur, the only thing that will never be a commodity is your relationships, the quality of your relationships is the only thing not replaceable. And here you have to work on that. Don't confuse hospitality and shape. You have to work and you have to be here and you have to work on the relationships. And this is something extremely important, more important than most countries outside of the region.
That's interesting. Yeah. So basically, you have to give the impression that you're not just in the region for 1 or 2 years, but that you actually are there for a long time and are planning to make an impact.
Yeah, it's an impact. We're talking value. Relationships are about bringing value to each other as opposed to transactional things. And you could end up being 2 years, but here is not a thing. This is a cool thing I'm doing, I'm selling, and your country will benefit. It's more, how can I help you with your plans? How can I add value? If you're thinking about what we said before, FDI, people investing in the country, it's a big drive for companies to set up shop here. And by here, every country has program to attract the companies, yeah? And then because they want you to create jobs, they want you to start paying, okay, tax is very limited, but still some tax. Be part of the ecosystem because at the end of the day, in the long term, these are the relationships that matter for them as well. So first time I came to the region was 20 years ago, or 20 plus years ago. It was very different landscape. It was very not transactional. You go there, shake hands, give some business cards. Things will happen sometimes, but now it is busy here, by the way. Another misconception, you're not the first one to discover GCC. You have incredible talent and entrepreneurship coming from India, from Africa as well. So it's going to be busy. Actually, it's very good. I would say to entrepreneurs in the West to come to this region, not so much to bring your valuable IP, but also to learn what other people are working on, because I get the feeling that we're going to end up, for instance, I'm originally from Europe, from Spain, we will end up importing some of those innovations. I am bullish on that. Yes.
You just got me thinking how the cultural aspect is very specific in the region, because we mentioned that 50% or even more percent of the population are expats. And it's not just expats from one country, but it's actually expats from different countries. So I still remember an interview that I read with a woman who worked in Dubai, and she mentioned that basically they got like an instruction or recommendation in terms of how to communicate with different cultures, because that's something that can get very tricky when you work with different countries. And Yeah, people just express themselves differently in different cultures, and different things mean different things. You might be offended by some things, even though they were not intended to be offending by the one that said them. So how do you see that the navigation of that goes, and how does that impact the whole innovation landscape, and how solutions are then built for the population here?
Yeah, this is a very interesting point, because in our techie or technology world, we always think technology, I always think humans, because we are building for humans. Maybe some people might disagree these days, and humans choose to use this or not. So going back to the misconception, this is a culture, like in some Southeastern Asian cultures as well, for instance, in India, where people will not say no to you. It's very rude to say no, which goes against a lot of countries in Europe where we can be a bit more abrupt, yeah? We say, this is nowhere. I used to live in Holland, it was no, right? Here, it's never going to be a no, yeah? But they might be telling you a big no. You just have to be able to read that culturally. And that's why I say everybody gets, oh, everybody is so welcoming, everybody wants to do things with me, because nobody says no. It doesn't mean that they said yes. They say yes, it's a different matter. So always clarify the yes. Mm-hmm. Don't hang on to the no. And India, Pakistan, a lot of different cultures, they have a very strong impact here as well. There are also cultures that they do not give you a frontal no as well. Yeah. So that's number one. But when it comes to entrepreneurship, and this is the area that I'm very passionate about, there is another factor that the country needs to come to terms with, the countries, the GCC region, is failure is normally frowned upon here very much. You do not only look bad when you fail, you make your family look bad too. Mm-hmm. So I've been talking to some academia and institutions, how do we, because to innovate, to become innovative, you have to crash and you have to fail so many times, what we call growth mindset. And you have to get used to failing, because in innovation, it's about the one thing that you will do right versus the 95 or 98 things that fail. But then that's where we something good to the equation, because in the younger generations, the very young population, in the average in the mid-30s, you can counteract the growth, the risk-averse mindset with a bit of FOMO, because it's very cool now to be an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. And that could change a bit, but still, you have a big name, you come from a big family, failing on something is not something that people would publicly talk about. And that is a problem not only here, it is a problem in a lot of countries, even in Europe, you could argue, compared to the US. And we need to take away the stigma of that, because without that, we will not have the true innovations, because people, what they do when they have this fear of failing, they start copying models elsewhere and try to adopt it because it's been proven. Mm. But you could argue that's not the best innovation.
Yeah. That's a very interesting point, because when we were on our prep call for this discussion, we were talking about how ambitious different countries are in terms of the innovation. And one of the things that I mentioned is that it's great to be in Europe. The access to public healthcare systems is great, but it, with all the regulation and all the thinking that we put into making sure that solutions are really good for everyone and regulated, this can also hinder innovation. And it often feels that less is possible than we would wish it would be possible. And it's therefore really great to go to the US from time to get that optimism, to get that positive entrepreneurial spirit that basically change is possible. And when I said that, you mentioned that the real enthusiasm is in the Middle East and in the GCC countries. So can you talk a little bit about that? So that mm-hmm. basically attitude towards change.
It could seem contradictory, but it's not. Because also, let's think about it. The Emirati population is still one portion of the population. We have all the expats coming and with a growth mindset, so to speak. The energy and the ambition of this region is Nothing I have seen. Maybe because it's a new country, maybe because it's a new paradigm that is changing. The young population, they don't have any hang-ups or legacy to deal with. But from there to materializing all that into entrepreneurship, into the new innovations that will power the country, there is still a bit of a leg work to do, yeah? And capacity building is one of the areas that they are at a disadvantage compared to the US, because there's no supply chain, there's no assembly lines for drug manufacturing. There is a lot of pieces missing, like a very solid grant system like we have in Europe, IP creating system in Europe, in US. And then the mindset is going to come to haunt those homeborn Emirati entrepreneurs unless the society starts to shift a bit. It is shifting. I know incredible entrepreneurs in Saudi, in UAE that are breaking those barriers, but it still is not something that you will see. They are very energetic, ambitious, but that from that to launching something that's really path-breaking, there is a bit of a falling to do, and this is the area where we need to do. But having said that, you have a lot of foreign entrepreneurs also coming from the MENA region, that they don't have that problem and they are launching a lot of incredible businesses. So for them, there is a very thriving market at the moment because there is a lot of need that they need to work on. Yes, it's what we say. The biotech, a lot of infrastructure for hospitals, digitalization programs. And also, let's not forget that the big opportunity of GCC might not necessarily be GCC per se. It's the immediate one. GCC Inc. And now they are saying they are signing free trade agreements. So it's, you have all of a sudden like an European Union, but cross MENA and MEASA, because India is also part of that. So I don't see the pictures only GCC. I see GCC as a nice HQ or place to be based. And then that opens the rest of the country. So I would say to anybody, any entrepreneur out there that wants to have a bit of a global strategy, like, founders should follow the money, but the money will always follow demographics. So follow the demographics corridor. 80% of the population is in this area called MEASA, Middle East, Africa, and Southeast Asia. It is asynchronous. It is messy at times. It will be very contradictory, even because then we have, going back to one of your questions before, we have to go and look, zoom in to country per country or even segment per segment, and you will see what the dynamics are, where is the wind blowing, and whether or not there is a place for you there in the ecosystem, yeah? So it has to be very sniper-oriented rather than targeted.
You worked across several different markets, and even now you mentioned not just the GCC countries, but also the MENA countries. So how would you actually compare these ecosystems in terms of the different approaches that one must take to tackle these markets?
You can't compare them really at best. And why? Especially in healthcare, because it is the most fragmented market, yeah? Because how we receive, pay, or cover healthcare changes from country to country and even within the country, yeah? So in that sense, you need to, entrepreneurs tend to go and say, okay, I got this product, where do I go? What is this product good for? And I would say you have to sometimes go backwards, deconstructed, look at the market and choose where you should go in that shape, in that framework. Going back to MENA, such a diverse, Africa has 55 countries, different dynamics. You have high income, low income, middle income, but however, they all have the same problem to a certain extent, is access to services and the need, maybe especially now with novel therapies, more precision medicine type of medicine, they need to develop their own therapies as well, yeah? I would say when you choose those markets, follow very much the geopolitics because it does impact. Follow the regulation as well, because it does impact a lot your choices. On the regulation bit, for instance, in terms of data transfers and AI regulation, this is extremely important because it could mean that you are not allowed to market in one country in that shape, yeah? because data knows no boundaries, but data government regulations do have boundaries. Every country is doing their own thing. So this is something that you need to follow. And of course, I would also encourage people to look at the level of digital maturity as well. Yeah. It could be an opportunity if the digital maturity is not there, of course, but it could be a big problem if you are relying on that. Because at the end of the day, what matters for an entrepreneur is adoption. And for adoption, you need to have something that the market can access, can approve, and can afford. So is how are you or where are you accessible, approvable, and affordable?
You just got me thinking. We mentioned how the technology is there, the infrastructure is there, there's new hospitals that are being built, there's technology that's being implemented because of this hunger to be at the forefront of innovation. But what exactly does that mean in terms of good data strategies, knowing what to do with the data and having a clear vision on how you need to build the infrastructure to be able to leapfrog other countries and actually be future-proof, not just solving the immediate challenges at hand?
So going back to GCC, high-income countries in GCC, as I said, there might not be that many cars, and by cars, therapies, solutions, homegrown solutions, but it's a great moment for motorway builders, yes, pecan shovels, tech enablers, anybody that will take, that will enable, for instance, discovery platforms or life science platforms or any data-driven type of, here we're talking aggregators, we're talking anything that is playing part of these tech enablers that people can build on, yeah? So picks and shovels. It is also a good moment for some tech-enabled solutions, yeah? There is a big drive for virtual hospitals and telemedicine. KSA wants to have 70% of all the services, like the provision of healthcare services, digitally delivered by 2030, yes? You have appetite to try new crazy things as well. The first holograms I saw, they were in this region, yes? You have the virtual hospital CEJA that has already seen virtually like 400,000 patients. And then it's also a very good moment for those providing services or therapies for disease, for areas that are very prevalent here disease-wise. Metabolic disease, for example, is a big problem. You have the highest percentage in the world of diabetes, yeah, for example. You have cardio issues, etc. So there is a big push at the moment of prevention because a lot of people have chronic disease. Then on genomic side, there is also a lot of push on CGTs technologies as well because there is a lot of like genetic inheritance disease, for instance, but that has opened the door as well to providing and creating the first CAR-T treatments in the region, like here in Abu Dhabi, etc. So there is some windows of opportunity as well if you operate on the tech-enabled therapies, but the biggest opportunity, of course, is for the tech builders at the moment. The ones building the machines that will enable others to build on their own solutions, yeah?
Okay, interesting. So if I asked, where do you see the biggest potential in the future, in, say, the next 10 years? What would your response be? You talked a little bit about biotech, the Dubai Industrial Strategy for 2030, and the Abu Dhabi Vision for 2030 actually consider the pharmaceutical industry as one of the main sectors to develop with its future growth prospects. As you mentioned, the supply chains and the desire to bring to build and produce pharmaceuticals locally. What would you say is an opportunity here, especially from the digital health perspective?
I would say that the digital health also has a role to play in this tech bio. Let's call it tech bio. That's the new buzzword, the tech enablers for drug discovery, manufacturing, all these things, because you can aggregate data workflows, clinical medical records with a lab information system. You can do a lot of things on cybersecurity, traceability, automation. We're talking the same thing, right? So you see a shift of some digital health companies that are going into the biotech world, because I would say for me, this division of different sectors, digital health, medtech, is something I always struggle with, because my definition of health technologies is, I only define health technologies in a very simplified way, is technologies that can be used to provision better services for all of us, or technologies that help develop better therapies for us. Yeah, you could argue that by this symbiosis of technology with science, or technology with medicine, is leading, it will lead to new ways to treat patients. Digital therapeutics is one example, and new ways to even conduct R&D, digital biology. But these are the early, very early stage of in silico, et cetera. So, but having said that, if you think about it, I see it's a continuum. Digital health can add those interfaces to collect anything from prompts to health, clinical trials, to this. It's part, you are very good at workflows, data workflows, aggregation, interoperability, semantics. You can add a lot of value because, for instance, something like cell and gene therapies, one of the biggest issues is in a CAR T therapy, the time is how you coordinate all the different parties, how the systems speak to each other. This could be an interoperable play for anybody who operates in the clinical side. So I don't see that division. So the question to the listeners there, do you see that division? Because I don't. So maybe we could argue on that. But I do see, follow the data. If you are a digital player, it's data driven, right? Follow the data and follow the journey of each of us. When we are not sick, so it's prevention. When you are sick, it's clinical. When we need a drug, it's the lab. Or when they need to make more research to cure more people, yeah? And then the answer is there. And going back to GCC, I think they will leapfrog. They have, this is a big bet to start creating, you know, life science platforms, but teaming that up with computing, AI, deep tech, and that leapfrog will drive the digital health market as well, and depending agendas of digital health market like interoperability. So I think this is where the wind is going. This is where the money is going. This is where attention is going, so I would definitely recommend to find your place there.
You've been listening to Faces of Digital Health, a proud member of the Health Podcast Network. If you enjoyed the show, do leave a rating or a review wherever you get your podcast, subscribe to the show, or follow us on LinkedIn. Additionally, check out our newsletter. You can find it at fodh.substack.com. That's fodh.substack.com. Stay tuned.